My name is Rusty Mackey, and you're listening to The Art of Stability. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the show. Listen, I wanted to apologize for not getting this out last week when it should have aired. If you have been waiting on that or wondering why the episode didn't launch, it is simply because I forgot to do it. And there's a good reason for that. It's because I've been working really hard to complete my first draft of my forthcoming book, The Art of Stability. I am really happy with how it's turning out, and I can't wait to share more of those details with you. Listen, in terms of stability and instability, my conversation today with Kari Patterson, author and conference speaker, really traverses the range of 6 years of instability in her life. And what I really appreciate about Kari is how in this conversation, she refuses to become a victim of her suffering and instead seeks to be a follower of Christ through her suffering. I think there will be something in this episode that really encourages you. So stay with us and enjoy Planting and Burying with Kari Patterson. Kari, as I've been getting to know you really from afar, something has stood out to me that I really appreciate about you that I'd love to start here. And that is, in an age of platforms, in an age of self-promotion, I really get the sense from you that your public life matches your private life. And what I mean specifically by that is I just see this really beautiful integration of, you know, you're the author of Sacred Mundane, and I see this beautiful integration of your life into what you're sharing in public. And that's a really hard balance, I know, for authors, for speakers, even just for Christians, right? You know, in this digital age. So my first question for you with that, really seeing that integration, that authenticity, is what's the story behind your intentionality to integrate your public and private life together?
What a great question. And I mean, I just even realized I quickly teared up when you said that, because that is a huge, huge compliment. I mean, I could want nothing more than that. So thank you. It's incredibly, incredibly affirming. So thank you for that. And yeah, I do think that our world is starving for integrity. We have seen, you know, we see celebrities and famous Christians, so to speak, falling left and right. And I think people are hungering for that. And if I was going to think back to a moment, I do remember when I was first, and this was, I mean, I don't even know, 10, 15 years ago, starting to think through, okay, I think I'm going to write a book and I'm going to start a blog. And okay, what is that? And I feel like God is telling me to do this. And how do I do that? And I picked up Michael Hyatt's book, Platform. And probably a lot of people are familiar with that, Michael Hyatt, and which is great. And, you know, he's got a lot in there about your brand, and his big thing in there, which was great, was you've got to bake in the wow, you know, and you have got to bake in the wow into your, your thing, you know, your brand. And I was reading the book in the back seat with my, well, now I know he would have been 2 years old. So this was 14 years ago, my two-year-old on some road trip, you know, and I'm trying to keep him happy. And I wrote in the margin, you can't bake the wow into every area of life. So I can't, right? So I can't bake in the wow to Instagram, and I can't bake in the wow to my books, and I can't bake in the wow to being a mom. But unfortunately, if I'm going to have to choose, I want to bake in the wow to what matters. And to me, that is home. It's my children. You know, somebody else can be an author, but nobody else can mother my children.
Yes.
Somebody else can even write a book on being a pastor's wife, but no one else can be my husband's confidant and support. And so, I guess just from the start, I felt like there, I'm just not going to be wow. I'm probably not going to ever be wow at something in the public arena, at least in this stage of my life. And that's okay. And so if I am a mediocre but honest speaker, mm-hmm. author, friend, then that's just what I'm going to be. And I am, I hold that for a very impressive answer. Just be mediocre. But I guess that has been a freeing sort of thing. And then coming back to what I mentioned before, I do think that people are craving for seeing whole people.
Yes.
I have spoken at conferences. One time I had my 4-year-old daughter with me. She sat at my feet, wrapped around my leg while I was speaking. And, you know, on the one hand, I thought, this is a disaster. This is a disaster. It just had to be. My husband was elsewhere. Jeff was elsewhere. And then on the other hand, you know, women came up to me afterwards. That was such a blessing. Thank you. It's so good. You know, it's just so good to see you also have real life and children that aren't clingy or needy or whatever. And so I try to remember that when I see people who are less than perfect and are living real lives and don't always look perfect, I'm encouraged. It's not like I'm repulsed, you know? I mean, so who am I to think that I need to be somebody that I'm not? So,
yeah, what an image of you speaking at this conference and your daughter there at your feet. And I can totally get the part of you feeling that's a disaster, and another part thinking, how beautiful is this? And what a gift, you know, as you're describing really that place of the freedom of being mediocre in some areas in order to really bake in your wow in others. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing that you came to a place of contentment with the season that the Lord has you in. And I'm just thinking again of our world and how hard it is, especially for folks who maybe they do aspire to be an author. Yeah. They do aspire to use their gifts in a public sphere. What would you say were some of the biggest hurdles, challenges to overcoming the desire?
Yeah.
And then getting to the place of the desire of really God's call, but then also getting to the place of contentment.
Yeah, great question. Well, I think of when I first started writing my one paperback. I have a bunch of ebooks, but one paperback, you know, when I was first working on that, there came a point, and now I don't remember the details of it, but I'm thinking it was somewhere around 2012. We had gotten a bunch of no's from publishers, and I was in prayer, and I felt like the Lord said to let it die. And this is something, you know, when I was 20 years old, I felt like God told me I was going to write this book. You know, I've been like, okay, you're the one that, you know, I'm echoes of Abraham. Like, this is the child that you gave me that you said was the child of promise. So, felt like he said, let it bury it and tell your agent that it's not the time. And in that, I remember very clearly this sort of, you know, epiphany, aha moment with the Lord, realizing that planting and burying look exactly the same, right? So if I am planting something or whether I'm burying something, the action is identical. And really, there is a little bit of, well, there's a lot of a surrender too, because God is really the only one that knows whether the seed is alive or dead. All you do is dig up that earth, put it in, put the earth on the top, and wait. And so I knew that that was what he was saying, was put it in the ground, let it die. And just like, you know, again, echoes of Christ, a grain of wheat put into the ground, you know, it remains alone unless it's buried. And so that definitely was, you know, I hate to keep using the word death, but I do believe that contentment comes at a cost. The cost is a death, right? It's a death of some sort of driving, gnawing ache for significance, or I usually think it's significance. I think that's what we're all kind of hungering for. Some level of success or comfort could be, right? Any of those heart idols. But so, I think contentment is beautiful, and it's such this like lovely flowery word that's easy to throw around. But it's hard to, to embrace the fact that it does come with a cost. It's not like I've done this once and graduated. I'm still learning this in the daily. So I think that identifying, if we're really serious about, I want contentment, there probably is at some level something that has to die. And again, not to end in this like negative, death, but there comes a resurrection, there comes joy, there comes contentment, there comes life after. Right? After.
After.
Yeah.
And after. Yes.
After. Yeah. After.
I love that imagery, because I think a lot of folks who feel called to something and then they simultaneously begin to sense the Lord asking them to let go parts of that dream. It feels like you're giving up on the call.
Yeah.
It feels like you're giving up on the task, and it feels, it can feel wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I love that imagery of burial and planting are the same, because there really is, I think that imagery helps us envision the surrender that you're describing of, all right, Lord, I am now entrusting this into your hands. You're the one who brings growth. And you mentioned this a moment ago, Kari, I'm still working this out in my daily life. And that was my next question was, how have you seen that paralleled in what you obviously care very deeply about your family, your bacon in the wow. We can think of raising children a lot like tending a garden, right? There's a lot of planting going on there. So how have you been experiencing that, that imagery of burial and planting looking the same in your everyday life?
Yeah. Well, one thing, I mean, not to get really serious and hard right away, but one, I was thinking about stability a lot. I love the title of your podcast, and I love the idea of stability versus instability. I don't hear those words a lot, and it's such an excellent description of how we feel. And you say the word instability, and I was like, yeah, but for me, I feel like the last couple of years, and I realized, oh wait, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, the last 6 years have been times of instability. On a very real sort of graphic note, my mom died last year, and burying her is really the same, because it's, I believe that this isn't it, right? And so it's this huge, massive exercise of, I believe that this is planting. I believe that there is going to be a resurrection. We're going to have resurrected bodies. We are going to be together. Christ is the King. He is going to right all wrongs, right? All the things, And then on a lighter level, when my mom passed away, we have moved in with my dad. And so we live with him right now. And we are, Lord willing, we have a little piece of property right next to him. And so we are, Lord willing, building a small little house that's perfect for our family next door. But there have been many, 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 many delays with the county and various things. I'm sure many people listening can identify. So we've been in this process for a year and hopefully just getting close on our permits coming through. But that, just on a, day-to-day level, has challenged me. I miss having a home. My husband and I and our 4-year-old sleep on the floor in the bonus room. I miss my kitchen. I miss my stuff. I don't even get me started. I'll start crying. I miss normal. I miss my home and my life. And he knows this. My dad knows this. It's no surprise to him. And so I'm trying to put this into practice every day of, it's such a trap to think, oh, it's going to be so great when we have our house. Oh, it's going to be so great when Ben's no longer in diapers. Oh, it's going to be so great. And it's, we all know this, but it's just a trap. And to go today. I mean, I don't know how many times I say this verse today. This is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And so that in answer, long answer, sorry to your question, but just fighting for that every day, going, okay, this is my life. I'm not just waiting until life. This is my life.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing both of those examples. And I'm terribly sorry for the loss of your mother and the pain.
She's amazing.
Well, what a gift to have an amazing mother who you love and miss. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, you just shared two stories of instability. And what strikes me in that, Kari, is, you know, you can think about the sleeping on the floor with your husband and your child and think, oh, what a small thing, especially in light of losing your mother, mm-hmm. right? And that is a small thing mm-hmm. in light of losing your mother. But it just strikes me how really all of the losses of life, you have these lowercase d deaths that are poking on a mm-hmm. pain that mm-hmm. you are living of the capital D deaths.
Yeah.
And so thank you for sharing those stories of instability. And I did ask you to prepare a story if you had one for us. It may include what you just shared. It may include something else. Would you be able to share a story of instability and how you navigated that with your family?
Yeah. Really, the last 6 years have involved a lot of instability. And I'm sure many people listening will be able to identify because some of it we all went through together, right?
Yes.
But we... In 2016, my husband and I were part of a 40-day fast with a group from church. And the strangest thing that the Lord spoke to us was that we felt like he was telling us to have two more children. So we were like, wait, what? You know, it's been a long time. So many details having to do with that. But in obedience, yes. And then he changed our hearts so that we wanted that, you know, like he does. Yeah. And so we had to go through quite a few steps to make that able mm-hmm. to happen. We did that, you know, paid the cost for that and, got pregnant and, we obeyed God, you know, yes, we obeyed God. And then I had a miscarriage and, I never had that experience before. I'm sure many people listening have had that many times. And I was so caught off guard because God, we were obeying you. Like we were in direct obedience to you. And I was really, really caught off guard. I just hadn't, that had not even been on my radar. So I went through a season and it was kind of a hard marriage season too. So we were wrestling through grief and loss and working through stuff together. And then about 5 months later, I got pregnant again, so we were thrilled, and I carried the baby longer, and then had a really, really awful miscarriage. Again, I was like, what on earth? Like, we are doing what you told us to do, and this has been nothing but pain and suffering. And then by God's grace, we did get pregnant with our sweet Justice, who's 4 years old and he's amazing. And then, you know, about a year later, we kind of thought, okay, God said two. So, okay, there's some more work to be done. And so, got pregnant again and we were thrilled and went in for my first ultrasound and there was no heartbeat. And with that particular season, it was one of those times, and I'm sure people listening have maybe experienced this. It felt like it was the worst possible time that ever I was speaking. It happened to be, you know, those of you who are involved in this kind of thing, you know, October is really busy for speaking. Usually April, May is retreat season, you know, so you kind of have these certain months. And I had like 11 speaking engagements in October, and that was when this happened. And it involved, and not to get too personal, but it involved flying to an event and going to all these events, you know, not knowing when this impending loss of a child was going to happen. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. And so if you're listening and you've had to go through that, I am very sorry. Because it was awful to carry around. It felt like carrying around this death and not knowing, feeling so vulnerable, and not knowing, you know, when that was going to happen and having to, strangely enough, the Lord used, and I'm going to share this at the risk of some of you being like, what, you know, God is mean and God's not mean. But as I was praying, the Lord took me to the picture where Ezekiel's wife dies and God tells him not to weep. Mm-hmm. And that story has haunted me. You know, I'm just like, what? And I remember after this happened the next morning, the Lord told me to make dinner for my parents and take them dinner. And I had not told them because my mom had some Parkinson's and dementia issues that just made things really hard for her. So my dad had asked that I not tell her when I was pregnant until like I was about to give birth. Yeah. Because it was hard for her. So mm-hmm. I hadn't told them. So they didn't know. My kids mm-hmm. didn't know. No one knew. And he kept asking me to do this and serve this and take these people this. And I was like, excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sad. And just over and over, it was like, I want you to, in a loving way, I want you to learn how to put your grief aside to serve. And so that was what that season was about. And, but wow. the blessing of that was, I do feel like God is making his people into people of stability so that even through sorrow, and that's, it's not to downplay grief or emotion. I grieved. I went through all the tears. When I actually did have to go through the physical miscarriage, actually, Jeff was at Harbor, the Harbor, event, and I wanted him to go. It was good. And so it was just all alone. It was good to be with God and have him be, I am enough. I will take care of you. I am your stability. You are okay. You can keep serving. You can. Does that make sense? I am enough for you. And so the picture of Ezekiel's wife. And then right after that, we did get pregnant with our sweet Ben, and that was in 2020. So yeah. Right when I got morning sickness was the lockdowns. And so everything shut down. We were on lockdown. And that season of instability, which again, any church leaders listening, I think will identify with, was the most painful relational time of my life, hands down. Any of us, probably anybody, but specifically in church leadership, you know, so that was a year and a half of relationships changing. You know, three of our elders went elsewhere. Not their fault, but relationships change, right? My closest friendships drastically changed. And Ben was due on, our Benjamin was due on election day of 2020. I'm thinking like, this is the most stressful season. It was like everybody was stockpiling. Do you remember that? Like it was like the world was going to end on election day. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have a baby. So whatever is going to happen. And so then, as I mentioned before, right after that, we came out of that. And then 2001, my mom passed away and then we moved in with my dad. And so all of that to say it truly has been a season of 6 years of what has felt like dizzying instability at times through death, through child loss, through childbirth, you know, which can be almost as hard. Then through relationships changing and church changing, the landscape of our church changing. And anyway, all of that, and it's a lot. But all of that to say, I was thinking through, okay, what were the things that I came back to again and again and again? And the two things that came to mind, and the biggest one, and this did have to do a little bit with the Ezekiel's wife, but maybe it sounds strange, but something that carried me through was minding my own business. And what I mean is that God is in charge of the world. Mm. And even he is in charge of his church.
Yeah.
And I think of Psalm 131, where the psalmist writes, you know, I'm like a weaned child. And he says, I haven't occupied myself with things too wonderful for me. Mm-hmm. I should have had it open in front of me. But the gist of that, right, is that I am calm and I am at peace and I am stable because I have narrowed my vision into what the Lord has required of me, right? And so, I mean, I could go nuts looking around at, especially during 2020, at what's going on. And so coming back over and over to, this isn't my business. And the other Psalm, I will turn to this one. The other Psalm that really hit this home for me, I'm sure everyone listening is probably familiar with it, but in Psalm 73 is where the psalmist is talking about, right? Like I'm looking around and I'm like, how come they're getting ahead? And how come the wicked never, you know? And I'm thinking, I felt some of that. I felt some of that with going, I'm begging you, Lord. And I'm experiencing all this loss and sorrow. And, you know, he talks about looking around and being like, I don't understand all of this. And he says in verse 16, he says, but when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task. I'm like, you think? Yes. Let me tell you, it's a wearisome task, right? Like, this is not in my pay grade. Like, I do not need to figure out why am I suffering and they're not suffering? And how come they get to leave church and I don't get to leave church? And how come they get to do whatever, fill in the blank, and I don't? It's not my business. And my job in front of me is to obey what I know that God has said to me and to rejoice, to be there for the people in my life, even if those people change out and are different than they were before. You know, and then you know the end of the psalm, right? In Psalm 73, he's like, get into the sanctuary of the Lord. And then I understood, right? God is going to make it all right in the end. And so that really was the first thing that came to mind of what brought and does bring stability is this just isn't my business. I need to give myself to what the Lord has called me to and let him do his job.
So good.
And the second little thing that was with that came to mind, and I remember sharing this with someone, was reminding myself constantly that no one owes me anything. You know, no one owes me staying at our church for their whole life. No one owes me thanks for what I did or whatever. No one owes me faithful friendship. Right? No one owes me all the things that it's just so easy to expect. And even I am not owed a life without death or sorrow.
Mm.
Right? I mean, Jesus kind of told us that we would experience all of that, right? So
yes,
mind my business. And no one owes me anything. And Psalm 131 and Psalm 73 definitely are kind of some go-tos that I come back. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense, and it even ties back into that idea of contentment and what are the things I need to bury?
Yeah.
And surrender. I just hear a lot of surrender in what you're sharing. I hear a lot of courage in what you're sharing to continue to follow what God told you to do in the midst of crying out.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing what you told us to do, and I keep losing sweet babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just takes so much courage to obey Jesus and follow him in that specific call. And another thing that strikes me, Kari, is just the almost the hiddenness, that word just kept coming to mind for me, the hiddenness of your suffering over the past 6 years, even down to the details of Jeff just happened to be gone when I ended up miscarrying my child. My parents didn't know. My children didn't know.
And the thing that strikes me in that is so often when we suffer, we feel isolated and we feel alone. And that's part of what makes suffering so awful, right? You really were isolated in your suffering. And yet somehow you experience God's enoughness. You experience the weaned child gazing in its mother's eyes. You experience this good. The Lord's nearness is good to me. So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned some very profound moments of just kind of shifting the way you think. Can you think back on the experience of God being with you? And were there some steps that you took in those moments of hidden suffering to really come into his presence?
Yeah, that's a great question. When you were saying that, you're right. It's interesting because suffering is isolating in an extent. And I remember writing about something about suffering years ago before I experienced it.
But
everybody has it in different ways. And so, but it was drawing out, and I think it was from Hannah and Peninnah in 1 Samuel, I think, but it had to do with identifying that kind of suffering where it's something that you can't talk about. And I think of, you know, different women talking to different women over the years, you know, women whose husbands struggle with pornography or just different things where you're suffering, but you're not really at freedom to talk a lot about it. That is, I think, a unique type of suffering that though it's really hard, I think that God is near. There's a potential for God to be near in a way like nothing else. And that's what I experienced was, I just spoke this last weekend at a conference and they asked me to talk about intimacy with God. And that's what comes to mind is when we are willing to either obey, which obedience often includes some sort of suffering, which I love what you said about the small D death, because I think of small S suffering, like you're saying, as the little things, right? The little D deaths to self. When we're willing to obey or to walk through one of those things without, for like, this sounds insensitive, but making a big deal about it, I think there's a way that God makes a big deal about it with us, right? Like he comes in and is close and near in a way that like we would never trade that because it's so much sweeter and better. And that's not to say, I think there could become a really perverted way of that. Like, oh, I'm never going to tell anyone what I'm going through. You know, that's really bizarre and selfish. I don't mean that. I mean, because I think there's in general, I'm actually pretty open with, I think we should talk about what we're experiencing and bear one another's burdens. That's what Christ told us to do. But when there is something that we just sort of have to walk through alone, I do think there is a sweetness with God. And I definitely experienced that specifically with the Ezekiel's wife, that whole thing of not grieving. I just felt like I had this secret of like, God knows and God loves me and God is taking care of me. And even with the miscarriage, it was like, I knew Jeff was going on this trip. And I also knew that God was going to work out the timing of my loss. Like I knew in my heart, and I'm like, okay, Lord, like I just prayed, like help this all wait until I get the kids in bed. Then I'm okay. Like then it's you and me. And he did. I mean, it was like to the moment. And I knew, I was like, God is taking care of me. Like he has got it all covered. Such personal, such intimate parts of life that God is in if we will let him be in. Yeah.
And as you said at the beginning of this conversation, our world is longing for integrity and wholeness. Yeah. And that just sounds like integrity to me, to be able to be honest about our pain and our stuff, not surprised, but honest, to grieve it, to work through it. And I love how you talked about the intimacy that comes from those hidden sufferings, if that's a suffering in your marriage, or if it's the suffering of church leaders where it's not appropriate to talk about, you know, 2020, right? It's not appropriate to talk about the suffering you're experiencing there, or if it's the example that you gave of can't talk to your parents about this. There's a sweetness and an intimacy there with the Lord. And that's such a good reminder and encouragement for us all. And on that note, I'm wondering, Kari, what are some practices that you are living into right now that's really helping you to enjoy Jesus and to enjoy intimacy with him?
That's great. Yeah, I've been chewing on that. And the first thing that came to my mind, again, I feel like maybe these are odd, but I'm a little odd. So the first thing that came to mind was just trying to not take myself too seriously. So with enjoying Jesus. That. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is with our world, but we just all just tend to take ourselves really seriously. And, so I'm trying not to, I'm trying to laugh, trying to not, I think what something that goes with that, that came to mind was to constantly try to not make my goal being cool. That's another weird thing in our world. Like, it's very obsessed with being cool or being, I don't know what, you know, that image, or taking ourselves seriously and trying to, I think that we enjoy life a lot more when we don't try to be cool or try to, and I'm not saying we don't have excellence or, you know, dress nice, or I'm not saying any of that. But just kind of lighten up a little bit. You know, our world has gotten very heavy. Yeah. I don't know if it's always been like that. It just, you know, I'm almost 43. I'm not super old, but it's like, I just feel like recently it's just been heavy. And I don't see Jesus being like that. I believe he was speaking of eternal matters. And yet when I read the Gospels, I'm always a little like, there was some humor in what he just said, right? I'm thinking, and so, yeah, trying not to take myself too seriously or be cool. And then the other thing that came to mind was trying to, and this is mostly with my children, of course, but with other people too, but trying to really delight in them. I read this book last summer. Actually, no, I only read part of the book, full disclosure, not taking myself too seriously. I read part of a book about joy last summer. And, but it was saying something interesting. It said that joy is primarily relational, and that we experience joy when we can tell someone takes joy in us. Yeah. And I think about that a lot with my kids, of I want them to see my face light up when they walk in a room. I want them, even challenging with 2 and 4-year-olds, but I want them to see that I delight in them. And so I want to get down low or laugh or be silly or whatever that is. With my daughter, it's acting out. She's a dancer. And so doing her dances and looking ridiculous at it and having her video me while I'm doing that, so she can send it to all of her friends and be like, look at my mom, she's ridiculous, you know? And that's fun. You know, yeah, I look ridiculous, but she's laughing. Her friends are laughing. Yes. You know, it's like, that's a win. Yeah. Or whatever it is, being my son's track meet, I am sure that I was the loudest mom at the track, you know, just like, I guess there's a little bit of that. I'm just like, there's no reason to hold back. Like, I want to get to the end of life and go, man, I used it up. Like, I am tired because I cheered, I laughed, I cried, I loved, so that, I think that the taking delight in people helps me delight in Jesus, because they're his, and that's what he gave us. And then the very last thing that came to mind, which is much more not profound in any way, but, you know, life can get so complicated in our consumer culture with trying to have more and more and more. And, I just try to like cut that as much as possible. But I wrote down, there's just a couple things in life that I really enjoy. And I wrote down flannel sheets. Like every single night I get in bed and I'm like, oh, I love these sheets.
Thank you, know,
and
Jesus.
I'm tired. And I'm like, I've spent my day and I'm so tired. And I just tell the Lord, thank you. You know, thank you for cotton. Like, thank you for sheets. And I also love, I homebrew kombucha. I love kombucha. And it's just, you know, it's just this one thing that I drink every day that I love. I want to be able to sleep anywhere. I want to be able to eat whatever. I want to keep life really simple. And then that said, I love to have one little thing, you know, that I like. And that reminds me that God is so kind to make us, we're not robotic, right? We taste, we feel, we, you know, things that are soft or taste just that certain way, helps me to take joy in Him and what He's created and what He's given us. So yeah, those are my super spiritual ways to find joy in Jesus. Kombucha.
Well, they're very earthy, you know, and as I'm hearing in what you're sharing that there's a delight in the gifts that points you back to the giver.
Yeah.
And really this theme of delight in all of, you know, even delighting in a sense and not taking yourself too seriously. Like, you know, I mean, you just think of the person, and I've certainly done it before. I think everyone has. I mean, it's just, it's not very fun when you are stodgy and you're grumpy, you know, like we don't need 25-year-old curmudgeons walking around. And yet in a lot of ways, that's what we have in our world. And so I hear this theme of delight, and I like how you summarized it, Kari, with this. I want to get to the end of my life and just like, I lived and I laughed and I cried. And I'm hearing in that really just vulnerability. And that really delight takes vulnerability just as much as lament takes vulnerability, that there is an opening up of your heart to life. And so I'm wondering, with that in your relationship with Jesus and 6 years of instability, and you mentioned sometimes you get a little cynical and you live in a cynical world. How do you keep open in your heart?
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's a good question. I don't know. I guess the thing that came to mind actually was a face. And I do have some really good friends. I haven't mentioned the importance of that through all of this, but oh man, there's no stability without, I mean, yes, it's just Jesus, but, and one friend comes to mind, she's 61. So she's a little bit, she's a stage ahead of me in life. And incidentally, she is one that has stayed with us, through this whole 10 years of church planting adventure. So she's been a faithful friend through a lot. But she's very good at not taking herself too seriously and brings humor. I mean, I can, you know, vent a text to her and she'll send some hilarious meme back to me, you know, and I'm like, I'm mad. I don't want a funny meme, but I'm like, yeah, that's what I need. I need a funny meme. I need to get over myself. So yeah, I think the vulnerability is it's helpful to have people around you that there's no other option than to be vulnerable. Like, you don't have that kind of friendship. If you tried to be closed off, they'd be like, what, who do you think you are? What are you talking about? I do think the thing that maybe trips us up, to be vulnerable is very scary, and it does, it's inevitable that we'll be hurt. We'll do something wrong. We'll act stupid. We'll say the wrong thing, or we'll open up and not be received. And again, I think, you know, kind of being realistic about that, that's going to happen. The inevitability of that, And again, know that no one owes me anything. I might be vulnerable and it might hurt. That's okay. It's still the right choice. I mean, we're probably all familiar with the C.S. Lewis quote, you know, the only way not to hurt is to lock our hearts up in that coffin and be in the darkness our whole life. And no one wants that. So I do think it's a choice of faith, courage. The beautiful thing is that it's contagious, yeah. You know? And so mm-hmm. when we take that first step, usually other people are freed up to do the same. And then you've got community, right? Then you've got the body of Christ, and that's sweet for everybody. So,
yeah, we can lock up our heart in the coffin. It won't be broken. It won't hurt, but it will become rock hard. And the vulnerability being contagious. You also mentioned the joy and delighting mm-hmm. being relational and contagious. All of that takes an open heart. Well, I'm grateful for you and for how you're navigating 6 years of instability and more on the horizon, and that you're choosing to continue to keep your heart open and soft. And yeah, thank you for your work and for integrating your life into that work. I'm so grateful that you joined us today.
Thank you so much for letting me. Yeah. It's a joy.
Yeah, thank you, Kari. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the very end. I hope that Kari's story helped you in some very specific ways, that the Lord met you through this conversation in ways that only He could plan. If you want to learn more about Kari's work, check out the show notes for a link to her website. And also, if you need practical tools to help you navigate the complexities of life, specifically the challenges of leading in our overwhelming world, check out the link to my newsletter, The Leader's Toolbox, to get weekly practices and tools to help you become a more grounded leader in today's shifting world. The Art of Stability is a production of Steadfast Ministries that exists to help you stay grounded in Christ to lead with confidence and clarity. The cover art was created by Brian Bim, music created and performed by Rob Main, and the music was recorded and produced by the Astris Company. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you next time on The Art of Stability.